work on two. So I told you it's a community of individual internet users. We've got about 150 app structures and we're active throughout the world. What it does, well, it's got to do by the ICANN bylaws. The first one is to issue comments in response to ICANN public comment requests. And that's a very important part of the ICANN mission in order to keep things multi-stakeholder. Is any decision, any report, any work that has been done is subjected to public comment. And in the public comments, you will find individual comments by people, but you will also very often find comments from the at-large advisory committee. We basically, and I'll go through our commenting process a little bit later on, we basically try to reach consensus within our community and draft a statement and then send the statement in. And of course, because it is known that by the time a statement makes it to a public comment, there has been a serious process of discussion and pulling and pushing and finding consensus, that statement holds a lot of weight in the overall decision that the board might have to make or that the working group might have to make in the establishing of its final report. But we're not only constrained to issue comments in response to public comment requests. In fact, one thing about the at-large advisory committee is that they are able to comment on everything and anything that is ICANN related at any time. If there is a subject with regards to the overall structure of ICANN or maybe a subject that is currently not subjected to a public comment, but that might be a subject that everyone is talking about, we can decide to comment on it and send a comment to the relevant staff, board, work group chair, and influence the process in this way. Our members are also often invited as individuals in the GNSO policy development process. They don't get a vote, of course, but they do get the ability to participate in the GNSO working groups, and I very much encourage this because, as you know, if you wait until the whole work is done and you suddenly start criticizing at the end, when everyone's finished the work, you end up being quite unpopular. You get told, well, why didn't you get involved at the beginning? And thankfully, we've been invited to take part in recent years at earlier and earlier and earlier stage, to the stage that these days we often are asked to even be part of the chartering team when the GNSO creates a new working group dealing with a particular issue. We can also issue comments about any external process to ICANN, so long as it's actually linked to ICANN in one way or other. It's not something that we often do. We already have enough work in ICANN. But to give you an idea, there was a request for comments by the U.S. Department of Commerce on the IANA, renewal of the IANA contract, and we did send a comment on this. It's a very thin line because we are a constituent part of ICANN, so it's a little bit strange that a part of ICANN comments on a contract that ICANN is going to be subjected to by a third party, but at the same time, we are somehow, I wouldn't say independent, not structurally independent, but we have an independent voice. We're not constrained by the ICANN song sheet. Our job is to really relay the input from internet users, even if it conflicts with the official ICANN view. And that's something which I think has to be recognized, because I can't imagine many organizations that allow a part of their organization criticizing it. We take part in cross-community working groups, as I've mentioned earlier. The difference between GNSO working groups and cross-community working groups is that in the cross-community working groups, there are several chairs to the working group, not just one. And usually there is then one chair from each one of the communities of ICANN that is involved in the establishment of the charter for the cross-community working group. There are not many cross-community working groups around because often the point points of view of the different supporting organizations and advisory committees might be slightly different. And just putting together a charter that everyone agrees with is a serious amount of work. We relay the ICANN message to internet users around the world. So it's two ways. On one side, our at-large structures, our regional at-large organizations that then tap in, you know, bring the input into the at-large advisory committee. All of those have information going one way, but we also have the information going the other way. So effectively, the regional at-large organizations promote whatever is going on in ICANN and make sure that at-large structures are aware of all of the things that are coming up now. So we had to relay all of the news about the new GTLDs and of course, the problems associated and that we're currently working on, so as to ask for members of our at-large structures to come and take part into the policy development or into the statements that we draft. And finally, we were given the task, was it last year? I tend to lose the concept of time, of filing new GTLD objections from the community. It was a very narrow mandate. There was a limited public interest objections that we could have, and we could also file community objections. I'm not going to go into the depths of which is which, but what's important to recognize, it's the first time at large is given a task that is an operational task rather than just an advisory task. That was recognized by our community. We fought for it because we felt it was important for our at-large structures and the community beyond our at-large structures to be able to file an objection without having to go through any of the other processes where there might be more barriers. And of course, you need to have much knowledge when you file an objection to a new GTLD application. And this knowledge is something that we can provide in order to help. We ended up filing three objections to the same string, but to three different applicants. The process was very bottom-up. In the case that we asked for comments, basically, from the community and said, well, would you like to file any objection? And then those who wanted to file objections put them forward to the working group in at large that was dealing with this. It was basically verified by that working group as being able to fit in one category or another. Only three came out at the other end. The ELAC voted on each one of these before they were filed, and the process is going on at the moment as we speak with discussion back and forth between the ICC, the International Chamber of Commerce, that deals with the objections process, the at-large advisory committee, and, of course, the applicants. Next slide, please. So we work in a purely bottom-up fashion. If you see the graphic here, at the bottom of the pyramid, we've got all of these 150, 160 at-large structures. And as I said, each one of them feeds into a regional at-large organization. And each one of these basically then feeds into the ALAC, the At-Large Advisory Committee itself. And there's always a confusion between at-large and ALAC. At-large is the overall community of internet users, and ALAC is the 15-member committee that is selected to basically give the sort of final go-ahead to move forward or vote on things. In fact, I forgot to say something two slides ago. I've got time. So if we can come back quickly just to overall map. Yeah, that's right. If you look at the ALAC itself, you'll see that there are three people per region. So that makes 15 people altogether. Of those three people per region, two of them are selected by the region itself through a procedure where people put their statement of interest forward, and then the region has a full vote. So every at-large structure has one vote, and so the person who is chosen by the region, it's the one that gets the most number of votes. So we got two. The third person is selected by the nominating committee. Have you already had the nominating committee come and see you? Or? I guess on Monday. It's a bit hard to have a lot of people before you. They're here tomorrow. Okay. So the nominating committee selects one member for each of the regions, which is really good, because what you get is one of the problems with selecting people within your community, because really that's what you would end up with, is that you end up with the usual suspects all the time. And having an appointee that comes in via the nominating committee is good. It often brings fresh air, you know, sort of a fresh outlook, new ideas, people that have a completely different frame of mind often. And so it really makes our committee one that is very dynamic and that is able to not only listen to our community through the at-large structures, but I think that each one of our members listens to their family, to the people around them, to people in the streets, to people they meet pretty much anywhere in daily life, and often receive much criticism for being part of the whole evil system that ICANN is purported to be. But we act, as I said, you know, a little bit like trying to spread the good word and say, look, you know, if you want to make a change, if you want to make a difference, then get involved, and you are able to make a difference through this community. One more thing about this slide. The 15-member committee, as I said earlier, is the committee that actually votes. So when a statement is drafted, the committee will vote at the end on it. When decisions have to be made, usually we work by consensus. So we don't have to go down to a vote. We might just say, by acclamation, everyone agrees to this or everyone agrees to that. But, of course, if someone calls for a vote, then we go forward with a vote. That is either when we're face-to-face using the extensive system of putting your hand up, all our votes are open, or using a system, online voting, and people are able to actually see who voted for what. So we're very accountable on that. The only time when we don't actually have an open vote and we have a secret ballot vote is when it involves people. Why? Because it brings bad blood. You know, why did you not vote for me? Why did you vote for them? It's one of these things. So when it involves the selection of people for the committee or the selection of the leaders of the regional at-large organization, we keep a secret ballot. It's much nicer, and it keeps everyone much friendlier to each other. The 15-member ALAC also votes for its board director. It selects seat number 15, the person sitting in seat number 15. And at the moment, that person is Sébastien Bachelet, and he is he's been now, I think, for 3 years, for a while. He's been the board member. And, of course, one thing you might have not been told, but board members, once they are seated on the board, do not represent their community. They go there and they have to look out for ICANN's best interests. But fair enough. The thing, though, is he does come originally from our community. So his framework of mind, the way that he thinks, is often pretty similar to our way of thinking, thankfully. And if he wasn't, then he wouldn't be here. So that's the sort of thing. Right, let's move on to the back down to the slides. So the bottom-up input to the ALAC, so it starts on the at-large structures, goes to the regional at-large organizations, and then moves over to the at-large advisory committee. And that's pure bottom-up. If the ALAC tells a RALO what to do and says, you need to do this, you need to do that, you don't get a very nice answer, usually. And I'll spare you the expletives that early in the morning, but you can imagine. Let's move to the next one. We work in a pretty bottom-up process, and I'm sorry, you can't see it very well here. You'll send the file over. Okay, thank you. So if an ALS, and if an at-large structure, what's in the little red circle, wants to comment, the first thing that really happens is a discussion within the regional at-large organization. They're mailing lists. In fact, some regional at-large organizations have even now got local working groups. And it's good because some regions are a little bit more challenged than other regions is that they work in more than one language. Latin America and Caribbean will work both in Spanish and in English. Africa, both in French and in English. And we do have technological means to have automatic translation and interpretation and so on. All of the calls of the ALAC and of the regional at-large organization, all of the calls of the ALAC and the calls of some of the RELOs are interpreted in the three, Spanish, French, and English. Now, if there is a consensus at a RELO level, that moves on over to the next level up, and the RELOs discuss the matter with other RELOs. And in general, if this holds a certain weight, if three of the four RELOs feel very strongly about this, and in fact sometimes even less than three, but they really feel they wish to drive this forward, then the matter is brought forward over to the ALAC. Next slide, and that's on the right of this slide. So if we go to next slide, please. Oh, wow, it works. It scrolls. That's nice. So the next level is the ALAC discusses this. In general, that's when someone is asked to hold the pen. There needs to be a pen holder that will draft, there's a decision. Let's do a statement about something. And someone is asked to hold the pen. And they'll draft maybe in a small group, maybe in a small working group, ad hoc working group. They'll put together a first statement. They'll put it on a wiki. You know what a wiki is? It's a wiki page. It's a page that many people can edit and so on. They'll put it on the wiki. Then ICANN at large staff sends out a request for comments from all of our community. And people put their comments underneath in the same wiki page. And then a few days before we decide that we need to move the thing forward, usually there are deadlines to all of this, a few days before the discussion is stopped, the pen holder or their team puts a final version together, presents this over to the ALAC, and the ALAC ratifies this from being a text over to being a statement. So you basically, when you receive that text, that statement, you know by what margin, how many people voted for it, and we also explain what the process is and who were the pen holders, etc., in case there are more questions about how the whole statement came to be. And then once that statement is ratified, of course, it is sent or released and sent into wherever it needs to go. Next slide, please. Response to public comment requests are somehow a little bit shorter because we're time constrained. So a public comment request comes out onto the ICANN website. We're notified. The ALAC immediately decides, or RELOs are also encouraged to have a look, decide very fast, do we need to write a statement on this or do we not? If we do, again, same process, pen holder, wiki page, feedback on the wiki page, and then ALAC vote. The problem is that between the red box on the left, or the red circle on the left, and the green able to tap the input from people back home and from the members of supporting organizations, which are structured sometimes in a similar way to the way we're structured, are able to have a bit more time. Release statements, and then they miraculously got lost at some point. But ever since we a few years ago, we decided to be very thorough about this, and so we have correspondence letters to the board, to responses to public comment requests, etc., for the past few years. The next one is the at-large policy development. That's a little bit like the backstage of those statements, and you'll notice statement was released because of our people. And then finally, the at-large working groups. You don't need to be a member or you don't need to be an at-large structure representative. Not everyone is interested in capacity building. And we have some, as I said, we have such a diverse community. We have some experts in each one of these. So rather than having everyone receive 1,000 emails a day, which is maybe not how much, they probably get a few hundred emails a day, which is a lot, you can subscribe just to a working group. And those working groups are open for everyone to take part in. So I suggest that you have a look at those three pages. And, of course, if you have any questions, and you can run fast enough this week because I'll be running most of the time, you're very welcome to not stop me but to talk to me while we run. That's it. Thank you. And I'm open to questions. And as it's 7:31, I'm already 1 minute late for my next meeting. But that's fine. I'm going to be late all week anyway. So I can spend another five, if that's okay, if Janice will allow.
Well, I'd love to, but I would have to defer first to Alyssa because I don't know what her time constraints are. So, okay. So thank you very much. So we'll go for just a couple minutes. We do have one remote, if I can do that first. Leon asked what happens when there is a conflict between the chair representing the at-large and the seated board member. Who's the at-large liaison?
Okay, so thank you. Olivia speaking for the transcripts. Are there transcripts? They are? Oh, well, there you go. I'm too used to saying for the transcript. Anyway, if there's a conflict between the board, the person selected by at-large and the at-large advisory committee, I'm not quite sure that we've had this before. We can be very persuasive. But I guess that, you know, there are some times when we have a different point of view to the board. And, different point of view to the person that we've seated on the board, of course. There are times when we disagree with the point of view of the whole board. Really, there's no special channel, if you want, by which we can overturn our board members, the board member that we've selected, the decision of the board member that we've selected, except, you know, quiet word in the corner and say, listen, I don't think you're getting too popular at the moment, and have a greater look at the way that we see things. But, you know, I don't think that we place that much pressure on our sole or only one board member that we have on the board. A lot of the work that we do is actually just direct comments over to the board. And we do ask these days for the board to reply to our statements and give us a reason if they don't agree with what we said. And, you know, so for us to really establish a proper dialogue with the board rather than sending advice over and then the advice is lobbed over a wall and we never hear about it anymore. There was a time a few years ago when it was the case. But I think that due to the fact that we now really document the process by which we reach the decisions that we've reached, it's appreciated by all board members. And we receive, in 99% of our cases now, we do receive answers to the issues that we raise.
Okay, my name is Paul Moshene, and I just have a question concerning how does a chapter like the Internet Society local chapter join the ALA, the at-large structure? What is the process?
Yes, thank you. That's a very good question, and I always forget to mention it in my presentation. So a chapter or a potential at-large structure that would go over to a web page. If you go to www.atlarge.icann.org or even just atlarge.icann.org, you got it here. There's a page that gives you the exact process by which you apply. The way that it works is that you fill in an application. So the organization fills in an application and answers a number of questions. That application is sent by email over to at-large staff at the address that we have. And that then goes through staff due diligence. They verify that all of the information that's been put on that page is actually correct, and that there is a website indeed, and that the answers to the questions are real and are not just made up. That then gets sent over to the regional at-large organization, which geographically which your organization is part of. And that regional at-large organization shares it with all of the members, the current member at-large structures in the region, with the same information as what you have provided, plus the due diligence information provided by staff. And each one of the current at-large structures then is able to look at the application and say yes or no. They vote on it, and that advice is then given by the RALO over to the at-large advisory committee. And the at-large advisory committee has the choice and also has access to all of that information and has the choice to say yes or no. Yes to the advice of the regional at-large organization to accept or to refuse this application or go against the RALO advice. And there have been times when the ALAC has gone against the RALO advice. So there's several levels of safeguards, if you want, and each application is treated very, very seriously indeed. Because decertifying an at-large structure is not an easy task. You can't kick people out like this. You need to make sure that they fit a certain criteria. And among the criteria, that organization needs to really have a direct link with internet users. It doesn't preclude, the thing with at-large, it doesn't preclude also having connections with maybe corporate entities. But if it's going to be mixed, there needs to be a direct connection with internet users. So the board of that organization would need to have independent internet users. The members of that organization, at least a large segment of that organization, would need to be internet users. So for an ISOC chapter, I know that some have got a corporate membership and some have got an individual membership. We have several ISOC chapters that are at-large structures. What I do say, though, is ICANN has this ability to suck you in and take all of your life away. Because it's addictive. You think, wow, I can make a difference, especially in this environment. If you are a starting chapter and you have a number of projects, I usually don't pressure chapters because I think, well, you might have other projects and a limited number of people at the moment. You might think you just will have one person that will be dealing with the ICANN work, but in fact there's so much to do that it might suddenly divert all of your chapter's attention to ICANN. But larger chapters or chapters that have been established for a while, and that's the same for all organizations, by the way, organizations that have been around for a while that are running properly are extremely welcome to come and in fact, very, very encouraged to apply.
Actually, the next question is right over here. It may need to be the last. You have to tell me.
Okay, well, I hope my question is very easy and straightforward to answer. You mentioned something about the consensus.
And hold one second. For the record, remember, name.
Okay, Alejandro Acosta from Venezuela. I'm a fellow. Thank you. My question is, how do you mean consensus? What is for you consensus or for ICANN? Is it the majority of the people, 100% of the people?
Yes, thank you. Olivia speaking, for the transcript, or for the record. You're asking an age-old question at ICANN. What is consensus? There are two big questions, by the way, which no one has ever managed to answer properly yet. The first one is, what is consensus? The second one is, what is the public interest? So if you have ideas about this, then you'll be very welcome to bring them forward. Consensus in the GNSO sense, the GNSO, generic name supporting organization, has spent months trying to define what consensus is and has come up with a whole range of answers, from full consensus, broad consensus, it's sort of where the majority of people agree with one thing. At large, we haven't really defined consensus. I'd like to think, as the chair, that consensus is when everyone agrees. But of course, it's very rarely the case. There are very often people who don't agree, and for very legitimate reasons sometimes. It really is a matter of feeling the temperature of the room. If you have a majority of people that agree with each other, you would say, well, we have some consensus. Of course, if that majority is just by one, we're 15 people. So if 7 people on one side are for something and 8 are against it, I would say we're pretty much divided on the issue. Even though one might have a majority by one vote, we don't really have consensus. So I'd think that consensus is really achieved when you might have one or two voices that are against against an issue. And bearing in mind that when you do a vote, and that's often the case in everything at ICANN, only the positive votes are counted. So if you have 8 votes and 4 abstentions, the abstentions really count as no's, because the only thing that, is the negative, they might as well have voted no rather than just abstain. But sometimes people abstain because they might not feel qualified in being able to make a judgment, or because there is no consensus in their own community, so they'd rather abstain rather than go one way or another. But in general, I'd say in our 15-member committee, if between 9 and 11 people, I'd say, no, sorry, more than 10 to 11 people are going for this, and a majority of our community is for a statement, we'd say that we do have a broad consensus. It's one of these things which can't be exactly quantified.
Thank you.
And I think at that, I need to send you off on your way. Now, please take Olivier up in his word. If you want to run with him down a hall, we've all done it. It's quite a great experience. Can do that. Also, remember, one of our alumni, Sarah Noosh, is available here for us all week, just elected to be vice chair of AppRelo. She's at the DNS Women's Breakfast. At DNS Women's Breakfast, where I send all the alumni fellow.
So she's getting breakfast and we're not. Okay.
Coffee is ready for you over there. Olivier, thank you so very much. And again, really appreciate the time that you spend with us, and a couple lessons learned always every time one of the chairs comes. One is the amount of work. Just as a reminder, Olivier was about 21 when I met him 3 years ago. the workload on our chairs is just absolutely tremendous, and I always appreciate the time that they can spend with us out of their very busy days. Two, he reminds us about the speaking for the transcript. So in all of the sessions, you do have to remember, as we talked yesterday in the newcomer's presentation, always your name, and if you're speaking on behalf of an entity who was approved for you to speak on behalf of them, you may announce that as well. Unless that has happened, you need to stay safe and speak on your own accord. Three, I just want to mention, when you come into a room as a newcomer, a fellow, either one, please do not hesitate to come and sit at the big kids' table. We are all here as one community, and unless, like, this is the GAC room, which we get to use, and so the members of the GAC are sitting directly around the table as they need to. But in any other case, the seats are open. There's usually a little A-frame that says where the speakers are, but you are not relegated to the back of the room. New faces are welcome at the table, and I think it also creates an atmosphere for you that you feel much more ready to just hit the mic button and make a comment. So when you do that, and I'll just finish here before I hand out to Elisa, don't forget when you hit the button to make a comment, when you're finished, take the button off so that the next microphone can open up. So it's a little bit of protocol, but really be familiar, be happy, sit around our table. And Lisa, with that, please.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm really happy to share with you what I know about ICANN and the business constituency. And I'm also very happy to answer any questions that I can. So to start, my name is Elisa Cooper. I am the chair of the business constituency. And I thought what we might do today is talk a little bit about what the business constituency is, what it does, how it operates. I'll share with you how I became involved with ICANN and then later on the business constituency. And of course, I would invite anyone who has any interest in making the internet safe for business to come talk to me later about actually becoming part of the business constituency. So to get started, it might be helpful to do a little bit of a background about exactly what the business constituency is and sort of where it falls into the whole ICANN environment. And so if you look up at the chart here, and I know this is, you know, this honestly, I've been involved with ICANN for 5 years, and I'm learning something new every day. Every day I still am learning something new about this organization, and frankly, I found much of this to be quite daunting. But I want to share with you where the business constituency lies within the ICANN world. We are, you probably can't even see it, but we fall under the GNSO, which stands for the Generic Name Supporting Organization. That little yellowish-greenish box up there is the group that's actually responsible for developing policy within ICANN. And the GNSO is divided into two houses. There is the contracted parties house and the non-contracted parties house. And within the contracted parties house, that is really the group that is responsible for being registries and registrars. That is the group that actually has contracts with ICANN. The other side of the house is the non-contracted parties. And within the non-contracted parties, you've got the commercial business users and the non-commercial business users. And I am part of the group that is the commercial stakeholders group. And further down into the commercial stakeholders group, you've got the intellectual property constituency, the business constituency, and then the internet service providers. So, do you really need to know all that? Not really. What you really need to know is there's sort of two groups. You've got non-commercial interests and commercial interests. And the business constituency is part of that commercial interest. And what is the focus of the business constituency? We are really the voice of business on the internet. And we sort of have three primary points of interest. The first one being that we want to make sure that the end users, internet users, have confidence in using the internet for business. We also want to make sure that the domain name environment is a competitive marketplace, meaning we have choice of registrars and registries. And then finally, and very importantly, this actually separates us a little bit from the intellectual property constituency, which we generally fall in line with. We are also concerned about ensuring the security and stability of the internet. So again, three areas that we are very concerned with: making sure the business, the internet is a safe place to conduct business, that the market, we've got, you know, the ability to choose different providers, and that the internet is a safe and secure place to do business. Now, I became involved with ICANN about 5 years ago, more heavily. I've been in the industry for about 11 years in the domain name industry. And about 5 years ago, when this whole new GTLD business sort of came about, my ears perked up and I became much more involved in terms of following ICANN. So I was not always involved in the constituency group. I followed ICANN by looking at the website, by attending webinars, and so I followed closely in that way. And then several years ago, I decided, you know what? I need to engage even further. I need to become part And have my voice heard in a different way. Now, you don't have to participate with a constituency group to have your voice heard. You always have the ability to follow the public comments, to respond to the public comments, because that's really one of the most important ways to have your voice heard. But I felt that I needed to be engaging at a different level, at an even deeper level. And so several years ago, I decided, well, I think it's time for me to engage a little bit further, and I joined the business constituency. Now, the business constituency has many different kinds of members. We've got members from very, very large, multinational, global 2,000 businesses, part of the business constituency. We have micro enterprises where there is one or two people that are working at a business that belongs. So we've got a complete range. And also, you know, there's geographical diversity as well. So in order to participate, you know, we are actually very interested in having a lot of diversity and a lot of different kinds of businesses actually represented in the business constituency. What do we do? As a group, we meet frequently via teleconferences. We also follow closely the comments as they're coming out from ICANN. And together as a group, we work to do analysis on those comments. We prepare comments. We work together to review reports which are posted during the public comment processes. And so that's a big part of what we're doing. We are following the policy development processes that are ongoing and contributing with our comments where possible. And we do that as a group effort. We've also developed over time really kind of as we've gone and been developing our comments, we've developed our positions. So we have a number of different positions which we can go back and look at. And sometimes when a question is being asked, we can say, oh, we already have a position on that, and here's our position. A lot of times, though, we end up developing our positions as we're actually addressing comments that are being asked for. And that's an ongoing process as well. And we always definitely are striving for a consensus. And so when we develop those positions as a group, we're looking for, you know, the majority of the people to agree before we go forth with any kind of a position. I think one of the benefits of joining the business constituency is that we have all kinds of members in terms of their levels of knowledge and experience with ICANN. We've got some members who go back to the very early days of ICANN and bring with them a tremendous history. We've got other people like myself who've been involved for several years, and then we have a number of newcomers. And together, we all bring a different perspective, and we can learn from each other. And it also provides, and what I'm striving for with the business constituency, is to make a lot of this information, which can be often very complex, understandable. Because, you know, with all of the acronyms and insider language, it can be a challenging place to really understand what is going on. And so that's one of the things that I actually strive for with the business constituency, is to try to make this an easier place to navigate the ICANN landscape. So with that, I actually would like to open it up and answer any questions that I can about anything I've said, about what the business constituency does, how we fit in with the organization, the kinds of things that we do.
Hi, Adrian Quesada from Costa Rica. I'm a fellow. I would like to ask you, could you name the top three issues that are currently considered or studied in your group, and how this could interest a prospective member?
So there are a couple of reoccurring themes which we continually focus on, or have been focusing on for many years. Definitely new GTLDs and making sure there are rights protection mechanisms available to business has been a top concern, and we've been long advocating for improvements to rights protection mechanisms. And let me define rights protection mechanisms. There are some arbitration policies which we've had in the past so that, you know, brand owners and companies can protect their brands on the internet. And we've asked that there be additional kinds of policies in place, or methods or ways for brand owners to protect themselves. We have some new things with the new GTLD program. You might have heard about this thing called like the trademark clearinghouse or the uniform rapid suspension or these claims notices. These are all different rights protection mechanisms, which we've been strong advocates for. Certainly, you know, I think as a result of the work we've done, we've seen some additional improvements come about. And that's been, you know, very good for us, and we've been very happy about that. But of course, for us, it's really never enough, and so we'll continue to push and make sure we continue to see those kinds of things in place so that brands can protect themselves and businesses can protect themselves on the internet. Another area we focus on tremendously, it's actually part of our mission, is the whole area around security and stability. And there are some open questions right now about things like dotless domains and where basically in the new GTLDs there is the thought that there could be some registries who don't actually want to use the dot, but there's some security concerns and stability concerns about that. And we want to know more about that, and we want to make sure that those kinds of potential risks are mitigated. And so we'll continue to sort of follow that and comment on that. There are also some security or vulnerabilities potentially related to SSL certs, where perhaps an SSL cert was issued for an internal server, which might match the name of a new domain name in the new GTLDs. So there are some concerns that we have about that. There are, you know, there's also this issue of potential collision of in the namespace, meaning, again, there have been some internal servers can be named anything you want them to be named. And now with new GTLDs, well, you know, there's going to be many, many options. And so there's some concern that, well, you know, what happens if there are internal servers that have been named one thing and now there's an actual domain that's named this other thing? You know, what are the potential risks? So these are the kinds of things that we're very keen on. And then you asked for three. And the last one that we've long followed for quite some time is a whole issue around who is ownership information, formerly known as who is. But now we're talking about it in a different way in terms of GTLD directory services. So we're very interested in following the expert working group, which is a group that was devised to sort of take a fresh look at domain name ownership information and how that information should be stored and shared and, you know, from all different aspects. And so those are kind of three issues we've been focused on, and, you know, will continue to be key issues for us, I'm sure, going into the future. Great question. Thank you. I saw somebody, I think.
Okay, Paul Mushene again. I'm an ICANN fellow from Kenya. I just wanted to ask also in this similar manner, like to the ALAC chair, how does a small business join the business constituency group? And is there a guarantee that they have an equal voice, maybe a small company, to that of maybe a multinational corporation like Google?
Well, first of all, let me say I would love to have you join. Just come see me afterwards, and I'll give you my business card. There's no barrier. Let me rephrase that. We don't have members who have revenues of more than 50% if those revenues are in support of a registry or a registrar. So they belong over in the contracted party's house. So if more than 50% of your revenues are coming from a contracted party's activity, you belong in probably a different you belong over with the registries or the registrars. So that's the only issue, you know, in terms of membership. But assuming that less than 50% of your revenues are coming from registry or registrar services, all members from business anywhere are welcome. Now, the only way in which there is a difference in, you know, from a large multinational to a micro enterprise is in our voting. So when we vote And voting, when I talk about voting, I mean voting for officers of the business constituency or for members of the nominating committee. There is weighted voting. So if you are from a micro-enterprise, your vote is worth a point of one, and if you're from a multinational, your vote is worth 3 points. But that's only for voting for the officers of the business constituency. When we are discussing our positions or trying to determine how we will actually address a particular report or what we want our comments to be, your voice is actually really just as loud as any other member. It's really just actually a matter of participating on the calls and, you know, speaking up. So from that perspective, your voice actually is just as loud as everyone else.
And Elizabeth, Janice, for the record, I better follow my own preaching. And I don't mean to say this to put a damper on it, but is there a membership fee though to the business constituency?
Yes, there is. Sorry. And so the good thing about that there's also a Category 2 member, which is an association. So we've got, if you're a business doing activities in more than two different ICANN regions, you're sort of Category 1 member, your vote is worth 3. If you're a Category 2 member, that means you're like an association, or a Category 1 member, that means you are like a micro-enterprise. And the fees are variable depending on which kind of a member you are. So if you are that member that's the micro-enterprise, that's the smallest fee. And I actually don't recall what it is offhand. But we often do offer reduced fees, especially for new members or for members coming from other parts of the world, depending what part of the world. We do offer hardship reductions as well.
And I'll just follow up and say, you know, that should not at all affect your discussion with Lisa to join, because there's a way for everything to happen. So, I mean, the most important thing is that you find the home that you feel comfortable, that your voice can be heard, and then everything else will work out after that. So,
yeah, we're always looking for new members. And in fact, it's one of the key things that I'm hoping to focus on in the rest of my term is continuing to have members from all over the world and all kinds of business, except if you're a registrar or registrate.
Good disclaimer. And line you up for the question next. And just to say that two of our fellows are parts of the business constituency, and they're actually lawyers. So I also want to say that. Don't constrain yourself to thinking, well, she said business, she said micro, she said associations. None of this sounds like me. So one of the things that the both young ladies said to me in their decision to join the business constituency was they found that this was the place that taught them the best. They really felt like this was where someone took the time to teach them about ICANN and the multi-stakeholder model and the work going on. And that's really important, you know, because then you do feel home and you feel like you've got a place. So don't let the word business deter you either. You know, just really think that each of these groups is working on all the topics of ICANN, but I just loved Adrian's question because it really showcases that you're not just, I think, focused the way people think you are. You're going to be working with the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. You're going to be working with security teams of ICANN. You're thinking about, you know, so much in the ICANN realm that it should open this constituency up to others outside of that standard business line. I think it's important that everybody hears that.
Good morning. My name is Mwendwa Kivuva from Kenya. I'm a fellow. I would like to know why would one want to pay to belong to the business constituency? And when we pay, what does this money do? What are you doing with the money?
Certainly joining the business constituency, I think, gives members an opportunity to work in a group and to also learn from the other members. And it's a good way to have your voice heard. I mean, frankly, trying to follow all of the reports and all of the policy that is in development and under development is a pretty arduous task. And so by participating with the group, you actually can have your voice heard across many, you know, in many different ways, across many different pieces of policy under development. And so while it is possible for you to, you know, frankly, go out and follow every public comment that's being made or and to respond, it's a pretty large task. And so another one of the benefits is also being to leverage, you know, working with many different people who are working on many different comments. And so that's another reason. So I think those are sort of two primary reasons. One, we try to help businesses navigate, and we give a home for them. We have our we meet every other week, essentially, via teleconference. And then we meet, obviously, at the meetings. It's not necessary to, you know, be in attendance at these ICANN meetings. We have some members who, frankly, they never attend or rarely attend an actual face-to-face meeting, but they do attend via the conference calls. And for them, that gives them a good understanding of what is going on. So I think those are kind of the main reasons that a company or an individual would want to join the business constituency, and that to help sort of reduce some of the complexity, provide them a home, and be able to have their voice heard and to sort of distribute the workload.
Okay, I'm Gulirana from Pakistan. I can follow. I need to ask, if a business is facing some security problem, how can it approach the business constituency, or it has to go through that ELEC procedure process, and through that it can contact, or it can directly contact the business constituency? Thank you.
You can always, if there are particular security concerns that, you know, would be of interest to businesses in general, these are definitely, depending on what the security concern is, you know, remember, we're focused on the security issues that would be related to the domain naming industry, not necessarily website vulnerabilities or other kinds of, security breaches that could happen on the internet. We're focused on, you know, obviously the domain naming industry. But if there are potential security issues that, you know, would be of interest more broadly to businesses, of course, that's the kind of thing we want to hear about, and that's the kind of thing we would discuss amongst ourselves in terms of, you know, is this something we want to pursue? Do we want to raise this issue? We would, you know, one way for us to raise an issue like that is we, you know, as a constituency, we have two members that participate on a policy council, which is the GNSO Council, or the Generic Name Supporting Organization Council. And we have two members that participate on that council, and that's the kind of thing we could ask them to bring to the council to open up potential discussion. And so there are a number of different ways. Potentially, if it was something that we felt strongly about, we might perhaps submit a comment during a comment process, or even potentially submit a letter to the board directly. So there are a number of different ways depending on what the actual issue is.
Thank you. And I'm going to make this the last question from remote so that we can all get to the welcome ceremony. Ahmed is asking, how do you know that 50% of the income coming in from registries, how do you know that number? What's the mechanism?
We just ask. So we just assume everyone, honestly, you know, we assume people are telling the truth.
Great. Well, I really want to thank you. And on a personal note, having been doing this for the last, 6.5 years, one of the things that I think is so important that we as ICANN, and I take that in very general, don't do is educate enough. And in order to get people to join ICANN and join supporting organizations and advisory committees, we need to get better at really sharing who we are and why we need individuals. And I think the clarity that you're providing, I'm looking forward to that, because I really myself can't get into my head security and stability in the business constituency. And so by you really clarifying that for everyone and all the other things that you're doing, it's really important in order to get people to want to come in. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Okay, so we are going to wrap this up. If you have any other questions for Alyssa, please send them to me. You can, and I'll get your email address shared. And great, you have the business. Beautiful. The business constituency started doing newsletters on their own. I don't have to speak for you.
Yeah, so it's a newsletter. I obviously don't have enough, so let me, I'll drop some off with you later. So you'll have them tomorrow or the next day.